Chapter 4. Desert Green. I live in the suburbs, where green is a lifestyle, and it's everywhere. On walls and clothes and lawns. It's impossible to walk down any street in town without encountering the humming of lawnmowers. And with all that green comes water. Lots and lots of water. Sprinklers whirring at all hours of the night, and water towers looming overhead. But there are plenty of environments that have no front lawns, no sprinklers, not even the pattering of rain. And at first glance, these places seem to contain very little green.
An image is popping into my head from when we were young, growing up in elementary school. We would get these books or curriculum that were not from our area, and these lessons always showed spring with a bunch of tulips coming up and flowers all over the place. And that was nice. We used to color them and look at them. But as I got older, I'm like, that's not spring where we live. We don't have any flowers coming up.
My name is Susan Sikekwaptiwa. And the Sikekwimana Yanopi Matsiwa. My Hopi name is Sikekwimana, and it means the yellow light that comes up over the horizon as the sun is rising in the morning.
Susan is an avid gardener and a member of the Hopi tribe in northeastern Arizona. And her homeland has one of the most arid climates in the country.
My homeland is considered high desert. It's just very, very dry and very hot, and it's very flat. You can see for hundreds of miles. But because it's so flat, we get a lot of winds, and that's probably our the hardest thing to live with around here is wind.
This desert landscape is a far cry from the lush green hillsides and mountains that were idealized by early European settlers who came to the U.S.
For the most part, the rest of the people around the country, when it was being settled in other places, didn't consider this place very hospitable. And it was pretty much deemed, you know, let's just go find a better place to settle. So we were left alone for long periods of time. In the more recent times now that we get a lot of visitors, you know, there's a paved road that connects us to I-40. And I think when people come here, they encounter the historic villages. And when they see these places, they're like, how do these people live here? There's no water, there's no food. And where did they go? And the Hopi people are sitting right here like, we're right here. We just kind of moved a little bit further over from that village and we've created new villages.
Over the 2,000 years that they've lived here, the Hopi people have become stewards of the land, and they have learned ways to plant crops to fit their environment. Namely, through dry farming, a process where they cultivate crops without irrigating them.
We don't water them. We get an average of 10 inches of rain a year, very minimal. And with climate change, we're seeing that drop even more. We get some snowfall, and we're seeing that less. But whatever rain we get contributes to the growing of food. A lot of people, I believe, in our culture today, American culture, are really disconnected from the land. They're disconnected from the environments in which they live. And so when they look around, they don't understand or really know what this earth can give us, no matter where you live. And so when they see a desolate environment, dry, hot, deserty, there's a big assumption that there is nothing here. But over those thousands of years that we've lived here, we've learned to adapt and live within it and understand it and thrive in it. So a lot of people just see the harshness and kind of move on. But when you are living within difficulty in anything, there's so many lessons available. And the landscape in which we live in offers just as much.
For centuries, artists have strived tirelessly to mimic nature, to find the perfect green. But maybe we don't have to fight against nature to make green. As Susan says, green can exist anywhere if we are stewards of the land.
You know what really amazes me? Our native plants, our Hopi heirloom plants, our traditional bean and corn plants, we put these seeds in the ground and they pop up out of just sand, and these seeds are so resilient. So when you see that green coming out of the earth, breaking through sometimes a crusty top because it's so dry and hot already, they do it. They're resilient, they're so strong, they're determined, and that's what makes me happy. And that's when I see real joy, seeing those plants emerge and continue to grow in this pretty crazy environment. It's magic.
This episode of Manual was produced, edited, and engineered by me, Emma Vecchione, with Jeremy Radke, Amy Pickworth, and Sarah Gans. Thanks to Victoria Finley, Pat Hogan, Gina Esposito, Lori Brewer, Emily Bannis, Sean Nesler-Mancata, and Susan Sakekwaptua for contributing. And special thanks to Bill Miller from RISD's Color Lab. To read this issue of Manual and see some of the artworks mentioned in this podcast, you can visit publications.risdmuseum.org/manual. And you can listen and subscribe to the Manual podcast wherever you get your podcasts.